isn't necessary.
Oh, that's a good question.
Meeting of the Board of Port Townsend Commission is in session. Please stand for pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I have a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Discussion.
Is there any executive session? Okay. Yep, I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Recognition of port employees.
Thank you, Mr.
Take it away.
So I'm going to let both Terry and Chris announce two very fine employees in recognition of 5 years of loyal service to the port and community. I'll just say that the backbone of the port is its people, and these are really two fine employees. We're so happy to have them on the port team.
Right. So Christian has been here for 5 years. He started off working for me in the yard running a travel desk and was a very good operator. And then, unfortunately, TJ, the harbor master, found him and swiped him from me. I still will carry a little grudge over that. He's doing a great job in the office, and a lot of people like having him in the office, a familiar face. And so, Christian, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Awesome.
Charlie has been with us for 5 years. He's quickly become my go-to guy, jack of all trades. I wish everybody had his work ethic. The port would be unstoppable. So, thank you, Charlie.
Give him a hug. Come on, he's got to take it.
Give him a hug.
Give him a hug.
We'll be caught
in film
forever.
Thanks, guys.
Wait a minute, before you guys go. As a port tenant, I will say these guys are outstanding. You're both really great to work with. Thank you for all you do for the port. You do make it a lot easier to work with.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Public comments. Anybody want to comment? Oh, hands are dropping. Please state your name for the recording.
Would you like me to take the podium?
If you'd like to do that, it's more convenient for you.
Okay. Okay. For the public record, my name is Pam Petronic. I'm here to comment on the IDD, not on the need and validity of the IDD, but on the need of public trust. We won't accept a proposal for additional tax levy authority through an industrial development district without a community-based and transparent plan for how tax dollars are to be used. Withdraw the resolution. Whether the petition gets enough signatures or not to be put on the ballot does not need to be the deciding factor. The deciding factor is to do this right through a public process with informed public debate. Let's go to the public first. Let's win public support first. We all know a successful port and a community win together. Ask our port attorney for direction on how to withdraw the resolution. The current reality is there is no plan and no public process. There is a ballot petition. The comprehensive scheme does not have a breakwater on it, and our number one priority is the breakwater. The people don't trust our port. The opportunity to create a plan for this IDD is gone. The public was not included. Public comments continue to be made regarding the need for transparency, trust, and community involvement. What will the community vote on? We need the port to prove itself to the public for accountability and trust. Let's create a plan. Our priority issue is rebuild public trust with informed public debate. The strategic plan, direction number 4 states, sustain a high level of community involvement that informs public decision making and builds public support. There should be ample opportunities for the community to be involved in decision making. We need the port to prove, we can include the public in this process, and we can include the petitioners. This may take a year, may take more, maybe a 5-year plan, a clear, long-range, financially viable plan about how to fix the deteriorating infrastructure, a plan that deserves public discussion and consideration. There are citizens who are deeply concerned about the financial future of the port and who have and will invest their time and talent to create solutions. This is our port, and its success is our community. We can ensure clear financial accountability that is simple to understand for informed decision making. We can investigate other funding sources. Is it possible to get federal funds for the historic district or for the historic designation? We can create a community-based process to update our plans, our strategic, our comp plan, our capital repair and replacement. We can develop a funding strategy, including understanding of our current financial position. We can create community planning with other Jefferson County organizations like the schools, the city, the county. In summary, is that for me? Public trust is a treasure, and the port needs to take time to build, communicate, and earn a way that the public process is included. Thank you. Yeah.
No, I can't hear you. There's a fan right behind my head.
Okay, I can go up here. That's fine. Kit Kittredge, Quilting. And as a follow-up, basically, actually, I didn't realize you were going to be saying what you did, but my question, actually, and what I'm wondering about is what is the status of the Citizen Advisory Committee that has been talked about for quite a few months? I know it was spoken of before the Quilting meeting that was had in April. But I haven't heard anything, and I think that is, pretty much what Pam is addressing. Like, where is our Citizen Advisory Council that's going to help so that we can all do this as a team? Because to her point, I truly believe that everybody wants to see a successful port, but with the lack of trust and accountability, I think that's not going to get that support, and people aren't going to back it, but people want to. So I think we just have a lot of work to do with that.
Chris? Going once, going twice. Thank you for your comments. Okay, moving on. Consent agenda. So we can look at the consent agenda.
We need to move the consent agenda.
Move approved.
You can second. Yeah, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Lease policy. So we have on our desk a lease policy. Do we have any comments on the lease policy? No? Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Yeah.
I think that was a good policy. We've already talked about it a couple of times. We've added some additions that I think are really important to have in there. One thing that it doesn't have that I think is going to be important that we also discussed at the last meeting that we need to include, but not in the policy because it's a whole issue of itself, is parking. And so I'm not sure how, I think that having a lease policy is only half the issue, because as we go further into this lease we're going to talk about today, I'm going to bring up parking. And I think that it's important that we do a couple of things in a real timely fashion. One is to get started on this parking thing, but like we've heard from comments in the audience today, engaging the conversation with the community I think is really an important thing to do. And so in my closing comments, commissioner comments of the last meeting, I made it clear that I thought, and now that we're done with the lease policy and that group of folks that were volunteering, that we should transition right away into the community, community one that Kittredge was talking about. And that way, we can then get started on things that I think are really important. Well, like what Pam was talking about, the NDE, and what I was mentioning the last time was the lease policy. So I know that we were planning, at least my understanding was, we were planning on having that in the workshop that we were going to have this morning to get this started on that. But then we had to cancel the workshop because Jim's on birthday leave, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think that what we should do is just plan that. I'm not sure if we should have it just be on the next agenda or wait till the following workshop or what, but I think it's important.
There's no standing regulation that says we can't have the workshop
right.
With any of the...
Yeah, at the last meeting we had planned for a 3 o'clock workshop.
Oh, that's right, at 3 o'clock, yeah.
Right,
so anyway,
26th.
That would be the time to get these things started, I would think.
I would just comment, when I read through the lease policy again today, there's two things that it strives to do. One, it strives to be good stewards of the assets and to lease the properties concurrent with what it takes to keep these assets rolling, both from a operational and a capital perspective. And if we go, and it also says we must do this with fair market value, and those are really two separate avenues towards determining a lease policy, and over time those will probably come into tension with each other.
Mm-hmm.
They already are. And so one of the things that the policy doesn't address very well is which way to lean with respect to those two avenues. And it's fine, we'll approve it today, it'll come back, it'll be haunting us as we move forward. So, do you want to respond to
that?
Well,
I would just say that, the commission is the policy-making body of the board.
Right.
And if there's any feeling that there are gaps that need to be addressed, issues that aren't addressed with the clarity and precision you would like, it's freely amendable. So there's no reason that the commission couldn't proceed with adoption today and seek amendments in the very near term.
Yeah, I think the analogy is it's a quart of grade sitting on the table, and it's determining how much of that grade is applied. Moving forward with what we have in this policy, is there too much gray in it? Is there not enough in terms of flexibility and pricing and all of the things?
So I kind of got from what you said was that there are several benchmarks, if you will, for setting the price. Really what we're looking for, I got from what you said was, which one of those takes primacy if they're in
right.
conflict.
Right.
That's the sort of thing that we might want to.
And I think that you're exactly right, but I think that what you're trying to also say is that these two things, no matter what kind of policy we come up with, are always going to be in conflict.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just the nature of the two things. We have this market analysis and we have the market. The market changes quickly, and it affects market analysis, but the two are always, some of them say, I can't afford it, I just, the market won't bear it, and that's always going to be in conflict. So then I think, in reality, since there are always going to be in conflict, that's really the reason that we have commissioners to make that determination.
And I'm mostly stating this for the record, so that it's on record.
If I could add just one last clarifying point, there have been some concerns raised, I think, from a number of quarters about the language here regarding holdover tenancies at sufferance, and I think concerns justifiably raised by folks wondering if they're currently in holdover, whether their rents are going to be increased by 25%, or whether existing leases, if they went into holdover status, would also be subject to the same language. That language applies to new leases going forward. It does not, it's not retrospective. We have agreements with these people, even those who who are tenants in sufferance in a holdover status, and that and they would not be subject to that 25% increase.
Okay. Now I can see new leases, and I can see if they're already in a holdover status, but I can't understand why we wouldn't apply the 125% to leases that are currently made. I don't think we ever told them that the lease would end up staying the same, did we? Or is that the lease?
It's generally the four corners rule in construction. If we have contractual agreements with these parties, and the contract, the agreement controls. And if the agreement is silent as to an increase in rent and holdover status, there is no increase.
You could always make steps to terminate a holdover lease because they're a tenant in sufferance, is what the law calls them after their lease expires, and then negotiate something. But what the port can't do is unilaterally call somebody up and say, you're in holdover status, our new policy is 125%, send us a check. You could go to the old leases and say, look, we're going to terminate your lease unless we reach a new agreement. And in the interim, we want 100%. You know, it'd be a subject of negotiation in older leases.
Could we create a policy that if a tenant's in holdover, that we notify them that they have 6 months to come to an agreement, and then after that the holdover penalty, even though it wasn't in their original contract, now.
No, it would always have to be an agreement.
We have to terminate the existing lease and then open them up month to month.
You could send a notice to somebody and say, we're going to terminate your lease because you're in holdover status. That's fair, because they could terminate the lease, right? If they're in holdover, they could walk away and say, we're done. And during that discussion that ensues, you could say, how about we reach a deal that we stay that termination and we do a couple things. Number one, we negotiate a new lease. Number two, you start to pay us 125%. The real point of the 125% is not revenue, it's to keep people from saying, you know what, I don't really want to confront the
increase,
the hassle of negotiating a new lease. I'll just keep sending a check like I used to for as long as I can. if they don't say anything to me, well, we're all good. So it tries to incentivize people to do kind of what you need to do, which is come and get your lease renewed.
I think I would add that with or without policy direction from the commission, I think it's the staff's intent that we're going to move expeditiously to try to negotiate leases with tenants currently in holdover status. And that was one of the principal reasons we needed to add bandwidth to staff, and so happy that Sue is helping fill that role in getting to close that loop. We have a number of agreements that have been in that status for far too long.
I'm just trying to get to some regularity. So would a policy or direction from the commission that leases that are in holdover for a certain period of time or terminated, or I want to get out of the mode of kind of on a case by case basis deciding when we've had enough.
I guess what I would say again is that our approach will be to, with the resources we have available,
sure,
begin to take these one by one and enter into the negotiations with tenants currently in holdover status, seeking to come to some mutually agreeable settlement. If we cannot do so, we do have the 20-day notice option that we can exercise, but we would prefer not to do that if we can avoid doing so.
Okay.
And staff can always elect to say, listen, the rent increase is retroactive to the first day we contacted you. So just by delaying 6 months or a year and not getting back to us doesn't, it's fair that we start counting from the day we called you and said, let's get a new lease. And if it takes 6-8, because then
hopefully going forward, we'll have enough focus on right. These leases that we'll get to people well in advance.
advance of the lease expiration and have that time to negotiate it in this fashion.
Plus, experience shows that when you have a 125%, people call you and say, boy, I don't want my lease to go up essentially 20%. Why don't we negotiate a new lease before that kicks in? And that's the purpose of that, is get people talking, get the lease done, yeah. Moving on.
Okay. All right. Discussion more?
I move we approve the lease policy.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Congratulations to the advisory board.
Yes, John.
Yes, well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. We have no first readings. Regular business, the Best Coast Canvas lease.
Yeah, just very briefly, I think the staff report and the summary of key lease terms on the lease itself, which are all in your packet, speak for themselves. We've been in discussions with Leah Tefkin, Best Coast Canvas, for some months, and we're happy to arrive at what we hope is a long-term and mutually agreeable arrangement. We're happy to have her potentially as a tenant at the Port Townsend. I would tell you that I think the idea here is, and I think this is reflected in the staff report, is that Ms. Kefkin is likely to use less than the total area leased and intends to sublet and has a couple of potential subtenants in mind for storage uses, among them the Maritime Center. So we're happy to have the opportunity to put this before you, and I'm ready to answer any questions you might have.
Conforms in all ways with the new leasing policy we just adopted?
The one thing I would say is that with respect to rent security, the policy has identified 3 months at the outset, and what we have done before, what there is precedent for doing, is allowing a tenant a period of time, particularly when that security amount is considerable, to ramp up to the full 3 month security. So what this lease before you outlines is 1 month at inception, at the time of execution of the lease, I should say, and then 11 months, the balance of the first year, to make installment payments to come up to the required security amount as outlined in the port policy.
What's the risk to the port for default, besides having the space empty?
You mean the consequences of default or the risk of default?
Well, what I'm trying to get at is having to make accommodations or trying to have to make accommodations to get people on board, so long as there's not some risk to the port that we need to cover ourselves for. So, you know, are they doing a big renovation that they're going
to
have done?
The issue of state law requires you obtain a lease bond or other surety. Here at the Port of Port Townsend, tend to get cash, which is pretty good. A lot of other places get a bond, and then you have to bond them. The purpose here is if you had a tenant and you started today and say the tenant hasn't paid their rent, we'd like them evicted judicially. How long will that take? And I think Eric and I agree that if we moved
expeditiously,
it'd be about 90 days.
Yeah.
So you have 90 days of rent so that you don't have a tenant not paying rent in the space. So I suppose the theoretical business risk is during the first year of operation, somebody doesn't pay their rent, but we don't have enough to move it along. We don't have 90 days worth of pretty low risk.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say is that, as you all well know, the buildings within the Maritime Heritage Corridor of the city's Shoreline Master Program that are also in the M2B, which is the Point Hudson Light Industrial, Marine-related Light Industrial Zone at Point Hudson, are have a really narrow range of uses that are well suited to these buildings. So I think we're fortunate to have an LLC like Best Coast Canvas that is a perfect fit for these buildings as a willing tenant.
Any further discussion?
Yes. I think it's wonderful that she wants to go in there, and I think she's a perfect fit. But having said that, there's some things that are in here that I see are noticeably absent that we just approved in the lease policy. One of them is common area maintenance. I noticed that this is a perfect example of a common area where there's a bathroom shared by I don't know how many people. So I'm not sure who is responsible for cleaning and for maintaining and for replacing the hot water heater and that sort of stuff in that bathroom. I realize that since we haven't really had common area maintenance clauses in our lease before, probably the other tenants in that building don't have anything. But I'm reminded of how important it is to have things clearly spelled out in your lease so that when there comes a problem, that you have it, you know, delineated. This is how we're going to solve that problem. And an example that comes to mind is when we were getting ready to close down the garbage at the airport. People came to, oh, I'm paying all this rent, so I should get garbage. Well, in the lease, it clearly stated that the garbage is the responsibility of the tenant, you know, and not the court. So, getting things in here, like, you know, who pays for it? Water heater when it goes out in the bathroom. There's lots of people use that. That's one thing that I saw was missing. Another thing I saw was, and admittedly it's not in the policy thing, but it's parking. There's only one little section in here that talks about parking, and it says all grounds and parking areas surrounding the Armory building are excluded from the lease premises, which makes me feel like that's like festival parking for a temporary service, which is fine. But the problem I can see is that I have a boat that could easily have a Dodger, and if I brought it down on a trailer, where would I put it? Well, I put it beside the building, which is where Pete also parks. And, you know, is that something that we charge for, or is that something that if you had two boats that had Dodgers that took up like four spots, how's that going to be addressed so we don't have congestion and I think it's important that you be able to do that. It's just we need to spell out how that works.
If I could, and I'll do my best here, Commissioner, I think this issue was raised during the first reading of the lease policy, and the need to, number one, develop a parking strategy. The way the policy that you just adopted is crafted is that it seeks to address non-exclusive common areas within multi-tenant buildings, so not areas that are exterior to this structure itself. So I agree with you that you raise an entirely valid concern. I will say that we have other leases. One lease, I think, is PSEs, where there are, I think, spaces that are called out expressly in the lease that are rented by the tenant. But that is more the exception than the rule at Point Hudson, where the situation is absolutely one of essentially carnival festival parking, and I think it's why we do need to have form a citizen advisory committee to help us work through how best to address the parking issue at Point Hudson and Lodhaven, but Point Hudson I think has acute problems.
How about the bathroom?
Yeah, how about the bathroom?
So again, the way the policy reads is it's permissive, not mandatory. It says that it may require tenants that use common areas in multi-tenant buildings to pay fair market rent for the non-exclusive use and share in an equitable manner in the maintenance and upkeep of common areas with other common area users. So you'll appreciate that in this lease, I think the square foot rate is both commensurate with the rate paid by other tenants in that building that have access to the bathroom. But you're, I think, absolutely right in calling out that an equitable share based on the square footage occupancy of this tenant in the overall building was not called out as a specific additional common area maintenance fee. That is a true statement.
Well, I think that what I'm trying to get at is that we've identified some things that we are lacking in some of our leases, and we just have passed this policy. We knew all of what was in it, and this is the first lease that we've come to that we realize is lacking in some things, and it'd be nice for our new lease person to be able to have some clarity going forward. Oh, it says right here in the lease that hot water heater shared by all of you or by none of you, or the port handler, whatever that is, you know, at least then we'll have some clarity, and it'll have everyone that's going into this understand where they stand. And parking. Like I said, that, you know, I can envision a lot of boats that need dodgers, all of it happening all at once and parking disappearing. Or, and then if there's not sufficient parking, that would be adversely impacting your dodger business. And so that's something that, and I know that we've addressed it specifically in like the lease for bums, you know, said absolutely no parking on this premises. And so other things had to be done. Here it's just not really mentioned. And so this, I noticed the police has contingencies in here for lots of stuff that's never going to happen, like court decrees and government use. We have all kinds of stuff covered that is never going to happen. But we have some things that are very likely going to happen that we've purposefully left out of the lease, which I think is just going to get sued. Well, and at least, you know, problems down the road, unless we try to figure out now so that everyone understands clearly what is intended.
Again, all I would say is I understand and appreciate the concern. If a tenant wants exclusive use and control of an area exterior to a building at Point Hudson, that would need to be crafted within the terms of the lease. Otherwise, the general situation and the rule, rather, essentially, is that it is festival parking. It's used by a myriad of different user groups, both tenants and public and their guests. And I think it's one of the reasons why we highlighted in the first reading of the lease policy the acute need to begin to identify a course of defensible policy action to deal with this issue at Point Hudson in particular, but more generally, Fort Wayne.
That building actually has access to a lot of parking options that some others don't have. It has the public parking right behind it with access cut through the fence.
You mean the city parking lot?
The city parking lot. There's the Fairview's parking to
north side.
On the north side, adjacent between the Armory building and that piece of private property there. There's a little chunk between PSC and the Armory building. There's parking in front of the Armory building. I'm sensitive to your concern, and I think that probably in the future we need to do that. I'm also sensitive that we've been working on this lease for a while. We need to get this lessor's business underway. So,
In my situation, I only work on boats that bring their boats to the dock. So I don't need any parking. I only work on sailboats, and if they are on the hard, they're hauled out in the boat haven or, you know, elsewhere. And I travel. But 95% of my boats are in slips at the dock and come from out of town. It's moorage. It's more moorage. And I would love to have to negotiate a slip for my business down the road.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the last part.
I'd rather negotiate a slip for my business than a parking spot.
Oh, I see. For Hossie or
So, Leah, I've got a question. Yeah. How come 2 years with 1 year extensions? If you don't get a sub letter, then you're going to think twice about whether you keep going with that spot or
not? Yeah, for sure. Okay. Yeah, the space is more than I need and right. More of it than I want to pay for myself. So,
I move that we approve it.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. That's done.
Welcome, Leah.
Yes.
Thanks.
Hope wasn't too painful. FAA grant funding. I think we'd accept it.
Yes.
I'll just say that we were fortunate enough on May 15th. Again, to receive notice that we were one of three airports in Washington State, 127 nationwide and in U.S. territories, to receive 100% or notice of intent to award 100% monies for our runway reconstruction project. So the resolution before you would authorize the executive director and his or her designee to execute all necessary agreements with the Federal Aviation Administration to secure those funds.
Second.
Yeah. I got a second.
Make a motion.
Second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye, aye.
Aye. Okay, take the money and run. Staff comments?
No comments.
Legal?
No comments.
Real
estate? Well, I had a nice little training session with Frank today, and there's going to be a lot to learn with leases. And that was just the lease portion of it. So I've got the contracts too. I've been working a lot on leases and contracts right now. I haven't moved over to the full position yet, but there's a lot of work to be done.
Okay. Commissioner comments?
Yeah, I've got a comment. So I was in Sitka last week, and one of the things that struck me immediately walking up the ramp at Sitka, right at the fuel dock there, were dumpsters, beautiful dumpsters. They have round ones. They're plastic and round, but the dumpsters. And then I took a walk through the city. There were dumpsters everywhere. Every corner has a dumpster on it in Sitka, Alaska. None of them are locked. None of them are full. They're just dumpsters. And we live down on Larson Lake Road, and we walk a lot, my wife and I, and we are amazed how much garbage gets dumped on logging roads before the Orange Gate. It's endemic. It's everywhere. Somebody brought a full load of sliding glass doors and threw them out of a truck. That glass lived there, still there. And that was like 3 or 4 years ago. We picked up as much as we could, but you still can find glass there. And so closing the dumpster at the airport is a national emergency at the moment out of the airport. And I don't blame everybody. I mean, it's like, where do you go in Jefferson County to dump your garbage? Do you go to the landfill? Is that the only place we can go to dump our garbage? And if you go to the landfill, you pay a minimum fee of what?
$10.
$10. Okay.
$100 pounds.
What's
that?
For 100 pounds.
Yeah.
$10.
Up to 100 pounds, yeah. And, you know, I don't know if we should increase our taxes or what we should do. This is a county discussion as well as a port discussion. But I think garbage is a national emergency in Jefferson County. I really do. And if we can't figure out how to dump our garbage, we're going to be living in it. And guaranteed, we're going to start seeing garbage at the airport because they're going to place to dump their garbage. And they're not going to take a bag of garbage to the landfill.
Maybe one of our student reporters could clear us up kind of more on this, but I know that the city has just instituted a garbage fee increase. And the reason they're doing it is because they're changing all of the garbage collection services in the city, and they're going to those little dumpsters like your thing. It's a big, like this, and
right.
Big lid, and it's not
it's
by humans.
It's solar powered dumpsters.
Yeah, but anyway, they're going to a lot. I mean, I don't ever fill up my garbage can every week and every two weeks, but I'm going to get this giant thing that I can fill up in 2 months. But everyone gets one,
right?
And so in the city, it's kind of gone full tilt the other direction. And with an associated increase in cost, too. So that may have an impact because some of the people in the city are going to have an excess of garbage space, so they might not be inclined to dump it on Larson Lake Road.
Yeah, could be. So, one, I mean, much bigger issue in terms of this countywide situation of a garbage discussion, but smaller would be, and it would be nice to have a discussion about this in staff or whether we did it in a workshop, but I think the pilots would be more than willing to look at a rate increase across the board of their leases to cover a dumpster and put it back in the environmental center. So I think it would be the simplest way to keep garbage at the port, lock it down, and pilot.
Rather than reopen all those leases, a garbage fee.
Maybe a garbage fee, yeah. It just seems like it would be the cleanest for the port to administer that. So that's, I'm just throwing that out there.
And then do something like our fobs that we have in the restroom to allow access?
Yeah.
Or
if I could, I think another alternative would be for the pilots to take control of the situation themselves. There's no reason why they could not organize and do this on their own and figure out how to effectively ensure payment for managing such a dumpster.
Well, it's pretty difficult because it's like a it's not unlike a marina where you may have a small group that's fairly active, a pilots association, but they are not, they don't have control over, you know, a majority of the hangars and airplanes that are out there are not part of the pilots association. They're more transient people that are maybe even snowbirds that come here and go. So the port would be the more obvious overarching. I'm just dialing the fee. I mean, I'm dialing Gene's time. So Gene's going to take Gene's time to do accounting on this, and it's going to take Chris's time to figure out the fob thing on this, and just dial that all into the garbage.
Sounds like an auxiliary topic for a work.
Yeah, so I'm just throwing it out. Thank you.
We ended up putting the port. And the port boat and Troy in the back ended up putting the buoys up a little bit later this year because I was kind of scoped up and I still couldn't go out and play. I put the buoy, the no eel, voluntary no anchor zone buoys out every year for the last 7 years. And anyway, they're out. They were a little late this year, unfortunately, but they're out. And kudos to Troy and the port for supplying a boat and people every year. I went to a meeting at the Fort Wardens Commons, and it was about the redevelopment they're going to do down there, and the Marine Science Center, the boat ramp, and all that sort of thing. And I went down there because, as you may or well, you may not know, before I became a port commissioner, I worked with Larry Crockett trying to get the boat ramp down there to where it would be usable because they weren't scraping it. And we worked. That would have been a really great place for the, because that's where, when I moved to town, all of the recreational fishermen launched from Fort Worth, when anybody used the boat in here. It was just a crappy little one lane down the side of a dock. There was no parking in. So they're having a big discussion on what to do with the marine area down there, which includes the Marine Science Center, the boat ramp, and the uplands around there. And there's a very vocal group of folks that want to have it be a pristine environment with nothing. And of course, that's kind of the antithesis of what a state park is. State parks are for recreating, not for, it's not a nature preserve. But nevertheless, there's some opposition for it. What they're considering doing now is doing, and I think this is a wonderful thing, putting in an elevated boat ramp so that the sediments can drift, can move underneath them. That eliminates the hydraulic permit for scraping off all the sand.
Like what we were trying to do with the that's
exactly.
Portela.
Mm-hmm. They're planning on doing that. Unfortunately, they've because it's been not really functional for so long, they don't see the use, and so they've gone down from two lanes to one lane. And they've gone down from 20 parking spaces plus the overflow down to six. And I think that's going to be a recipe for disaster. And the reason I say that is once they get started, that is the place where all of the recreational fishermen that want to go fishing on mid-channel will want to launch because you're already there. It's at mid-channel. It's where that thing is. And so I've been trying to figure out ways to help them understand some of the historical perspectives and the geographical perspectives as to how that works much better. But we still came up with a problem that they had a lack of place for parking. And I thought to myself, you know, we've got that beach going all the way down next to it. Access to the water is one of the port's primary missions. This would be a way to maintain or even improve access to the water just by letting some parking be put on an upland that we always forget we even have. That's something I thought about. I started bringing it up to you guys to see if there was any appetite for that. And if there is, I might suggest the landscape people that are doing this design could percolate that around in their mix a little bit.
So you're thinking like where the staircase goes down?
Yeah.
Well, it goes down that far, but that's not, the beach is really wide up by the Maritime Center, and then it gets kind of narrower down
there.
We
own that, right?
Yeah, we own it from the road to the beach. And so near where the boat ramp is, there's actually a lot of uplands that we own that could be turned into a, not a giant parking lot, because it is going down to one lane. But, I mean, six would just make people mad.
Is from the high tide mark to the cliff stairs, it seems like it's not very, very wide.
Oh no, it's plenty wide. If you go down and look at, I was using an example that they're familiar with, and that's the park down at Hill Walk Up Cape Disappointment. They've put practically all of the parking for their really nice three-lane ramp on a strip of land that's about the same size that we've got there. And it's a really popular boat ramp. They're really excited. In fact, they had the fish cleaning stations, this big marble slab that was designed by the same person that designed the Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful thing. It's an altar to fishing. But they were...
altar to fishing.
Yeah. And anyway, the same people were thinking that, you know, because this is actually a very desirable place for people to come. And I'm just concerned that if you make it too small, it's going to be like we had here. It's going to be too congested. And one of their constraints now is parking, and I think that we have the opportunity very easily to eliminate that and maintain access, which is something the port really tries to do, without having to spend any money. I mean, zero money.
So are they going to take the pier that the Marine Science Center is on and demolish it, or...?
Yeah, I'll just give you a quick overview. They've got a lot of scenarios. One of them is to do nothing and just let everything fall apart.
Yeah,
that's obviously
with that option.
And then there's one to take it out and remove the Marine Science Center to an upland location, and then just pump the salt water up to the tanks. Then a lot of people really like the ability to go out over the water and look down and see stuff. So they were going to put in a walking only pier with a little shelter on the end of it, so that people could get out there. But it would be not as wide, and it would be with grading so that it wouldn't shade the eelgrass, and so that it would be a lot better in that regard. And then move the boat ramp and of course have it elevated so that the sand, the sediments continue to migrate. And they had several alternatives, but really what's going to end up happening is most likely the Marine Science Center will go upland. There'll be a pedestrian only walkway out somewhere with the thing on the end of the boat ramp down to one lane.
So your proposal to use our vestigial property there would be to have a boat ramp on that side, or
no,
where it is parked
over there? No, just parking, yeah. Yeah, they couldn't move the boat ramp to our spot because then they'd lose all of them. They wouldn't own it, so they'd lose all the revenue, and then they'd have to make
it.
So basically, it would just be the expansive parking. Okay. Oh, and let's see, well, right now, oh, I don't remember where I talked about that. That's all I have.
Okay, since we last met, we had a special commission meeting. I know there wasn't anybody here but us, but we did approve the sale of the jellyfish, or some sort of fish.
Yeah, jellyfish.
A pretty surplus. Surplus.
Surplus. To be surplus. Surplus. And we're working with the broadband steering committee for Jefferson County. That's a happy crew. And I've also been out on the talking circuit about the IDD. One of the things that always seems to come up, despite the fact that we publish plans and budgets and whatnot on the web, is that we have no plan for spending $15 million, which is true. We have a plan for spending $19 million, and It's on the webpage. Some of that $19 million is going to be defrayed by the 100% grant to fix the airport. Some of that is maybe insurance because of the storm damage we're going to have to repair on the breakwater here at Boathaven. Some of that maybe if we could get to continue the grant that we have for the Point Hudson jetty, we may get some of that money back. But there is a bunch. I have a list. Anybody excited about seeing the list?
And it's over 15 years.
And we're talking about projects that go from now until the water's at our ankles. So, you know, we do have ways to spend the money. That's not a commitment. This commission can't make a commitment to spend the money. We'll all be gone by the time the money gets all spent, if it all gets all spent. And I think that's the point I've made before, is that, you know, I don't know any real hard way for us to commit future commissions to spend money in a certain way. And I don't think I would do it if I knew how. Because my crystal ball, gazing out in the future 20 years, I just don't really know what's going to be of most critical importance in that time frame. I can tell you today the kinds of things that we need to do. We continue to get grants for these things, but, you know, will we always get grants? Will, you know, what percentage of the money we have to spend will come from grants? I don't know. You know, I can tell you in the really short term, in the next few years, we have a pretty good idea. But, you know, I hope nobody insists that we tie the hands of the commissioners out into the future. It just is bad policy. So, anyway, Ron, one last parting shot.
You can, no, it's not a party. I'm sorry.
No, I mean.
I read your plan, and I recognized it right away, the colors and everything from 2015. And that was a good plan that the commission and Larry Crockett put together back then. And it's this thick.
Mm-hmm.
And really good job there. So I noticed, I tried to compare it to what you just put out, and I could see, well, okay, Point Hudson jetties was originally 5.2300.
Yeah, half of it.
And then now it's just 7.5 million. So, I mean, that right there told me that someone just took a dart, threw it in, and hey, 7.5 million, that looks reasonable because it's a big increase. But we all know it has no tie to any kind of a good estimate of what things are,
right?
Because we really don't know what kind of a design we're going to put. And I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just saying, when I look at that thing, that latest budget that came out, I could see Jim at his desk with the original 2015 Excel schedules and everything, and going in and changing numbers here and there. Some places he didn't change anything. And then he converted it to a PDF file and then sent it out. And to me, that's not the kind of analysis that you guys need to be doing. And there's all sorts of ways to do it, but it's too much of a shortcut. And I think you're gonna.
It is really hard to project. And you know, when the jetty renovation got proposed. Who knew we were going to have 25% tariff on steel,
right?
I mean, exactly. it is
but
very, very difficult to project, you know, way out in the future. And
but you can project what you're committed to doing, and that's my problem, is I don't see commitment. And I know that the folks here in Fort Collins are going to get almost all the money. That's just the way it's always been. Okay. But if you do a strategic plan, forces you to look at the entire county. Right. And you got to say, okay, we do have some assets in other places. And
I guess, and this is the last of my commissioner comments for this afternoon is that the county commission, the county residents have decided that all of the buildup is going to be inside District 1 in the urban growth area. That's where we kind of have to do business. That's where our traditional business as a port has been. The port exports 2,200 jobs around the county, direct and indirect and other. And not all those people live in Port Townsend. There's business people that own businesses and work in the Boat Haven here that live out in the county. I think there's significant, benefit that flows out in the county. The marine trades and the businesses that the port supports pay about not quite $6 million in income tax or in property tax for the about million, not quite $1 million that we get in property tax. I think that's a really good return on investment, and I'm not embarrassed about it at all. We have to protect the jobs that we have here. Nobody wants these things to go away. It would be devastating not only to Port Townsend, but to Jefferson County if that happened.
Well, I'm not even suggesting anything like that. I'm just saying, can we have a discussion? Because all I hear, I've heard some really good commitments. Damn, you have a great website. But everything is addressed to Port Townsend. There's no mention of anything outside the city limits. And all I'm saying is, maybe that's where we're going. Maybe we are going to sell off the Quilcene properties. I don't know. I hope we don't. But I think we need to have a conversation with the community and explain to them, these are the possibilities. This is what could happen. And we're not doing that. We had that Wagner study that was done in 2017. No one ever came out and discussed that. There was a really good, 10 pages in it that talked about Quilcene. And I'm not saying that's going to work or anything, but it just seems like we just blow by the rest of the county. And Quilcene needs something down there. And, I agree the marine trades are extremely important. I'm not even saying that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is that there are other businesses in this county that could benefit from the port. And I keep hearing people discuss it in their campaigns. They say, the port is for the entire Jefferson County, and we're going to, and I know people want that to happen, but it doesn't happen. And all I'm saying is now we're sort of at a point where we're discussing $15 million. This is a huge decision for the future.
Okay. Last comment.
We've been talking about this rebuilding Point Hudson jetties for a couple of years here now, at least. And the thing is really falling apart fast. When you overlook at it, it's a mess. And it doesn't have much life left in my mind. And I think it's important that we don't study the problem for another 2 years before we make a move. And now we've got a chance here to get started. I think we should get the program started, get the money, and then refine it as later on, instead of taking another year or more to talk about it with public and different groups. And
I'm gonna cut this off because this is just rambling.
Bill, I just want to say the needs at Quilcene, we don't want it to be at the expense of any other industry. Just a teeny bit. Just a little dribble would be appreciated.
So let me just quickly go through this list. Boat ramp replacement at Quilcene, $250,000. Fuel system upgrades at Quilcene, $20,000. Quilcene marina entrance dredging, $210,000. Quilcene dock repairs, $216,000. Matt Max boat and ramp repairs, $84,000. Jefferson County Airport Building A, $140,000. Jefferson Airport County B, $140,000. Tailspin Tommy repairs, $250,000. JCIA fuel tank, airport fuel tank replacement, $135,000. Agricultural products and processing facility, $3 million. Jefferson County Airport Terminal, $250,000. There are things down in, you know, despite the fact that, 90% of our business is in Port Townsend, there are things that are going down county, not to mention the jobs and the tax benefits. So,
no, I want to make a comment.
Okay.
Well,
good. Frank's going to miss his ferry.
One way. One-way trip today because I'm going to go teach a class to the finance seminar.
Okay.
Well, and that is, and I actually mentioned this to you, Kip, a month ago, two meetings ago, or maybe last meeting, but, I mean, I'm actually very surprised there's as much resistance to the IDB as there is, because particularly for outside Fort Townsend, as we just saw with that list, has the commissioner from District 3 and has probably one of the most ardent, hard pushers for the IDB, I felt that was a way to really move money out of District 1 into District 3, or outside of this of District 1. And it really surprises me that, you know, you feel like we're not having this discussion about money that we're going to spend outside of District 3, because I really think District 2 and 3 are going to benefit much more than District 1 as on a per capita basis. I would also add that people keep tossing around this number of $15 million. It's $15 million over 15 years. So
20 years.
20 years.
And that's a limit.
So divide 15 by 20, add that to our budget. It's not a huge number that you're adding to our annual budget. So it's not like we're going to get $15 million in January and suddenly be able to spend this money on doing something here at Bodine. So those are my two comments. Just that it would, I think from a commissioner's perspective, having been here 5 years, it would be a wonderful thing to be able to have an additional $780,000 to our budget in order to move ahead with these projects, as well as just sustaining what it is we're doing as a port.
Hey, I agree with you, and I'm not saying that I don't believe you, but here's the situation. I've seen these budgets going back 5-6 years, and nothing ever happens down at Quilsey. Now, the airport, you got it done. Great job. You got 100%. The port doesn't have to spend really any money to do that.
But let me make a quick point on the airport. That's the runway. The rest of the thing is falling apart. Neil Morrison is out there, nothing against you, Chris, but a pilot is out there with his own backpack sprayer spraying weeds because the weeds are growing up so fast through the aprons, it's getting ridiculous. So it's not just Quilsey that's not getting money. The airport doesn't get money either. So.
And if I could, I would say that our top priority, both now and into the future, is defending core infrastructure that supports jobs and principal lines of revenue for the port. That's priority number one. And the priorities that are outlined, both in the draft CRRP from 15, as well as in the most recent partial update, sought to prioritize those projects using the commission's adopted policy. So all of the projects that were identified in that tier one, which include a number of projects in districts 2 and 3, were identified as priority projects. The commission also adopted a one-year capital plan, and I believe concurrent with that, a five-year capital plan. So to say that the port does not have plans is not an accurate statement. The port does have plans. I would agree that we could do a better job, should do a better job in updating and making sure those are consistent, and we absolutely want public input on helping us do that. But we have more projects, vastly more projects than we do resources, that defend the working waterfront character and the both the direct, indirect, and induced jobs, which total 2,200 countywide, to depend upon port infrastructure.
You know, and just one more comment. Went in the bathroom a while ago at the pool scene. It was terrible. It was embarrassing. It was like, wow, this is... didn't even want to go to the bathroom in the bathroom. And I remember walking on the docks when Larry Crockett was director. I think we were all down there, and we took a dock walk one time, and we were band-aiding the docks then with whalers to keep the docks afloat. So I get it that Quilcene does not get the attention that it deserves to get.
The dredging that was supposed to happen years ago. I mean,
the
break, can't get boats in and out.
The dredging, the breakwaters almost non-existent now. And so all of that needs attention. And that just, again, I go back to, that's why I would really, as a commissioner, like to see the IDD succeed, because that would give us that extra money outside of everything getting vacuumed up to keep the port rolling, keep core infrastructure rolling.
I'm in favor of the IDD. I've always been. I think we got to increase property taxes. However, there's a real... people are upset that the port is turning its back on Quilcene, that they're going to sell off land. You remember when you had your meeting down there? You know, we've got to set a priority for Quilcene to do one project. So right away, before we do the Point Hudson jetty, spend whatever it is to do the ramp, or I don't know what.
I hate to cut you off, Ron, but we're rambling and.
Actually,
the fourth estate is up against deadline.
Let's let it roll for a minute.
Yeah. Roll?
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye. So let me comment about that. Let me comment about the land sale to Coast, okay? Because we have an audience here. I think the land sale of the property that's underneath Coast facilities, however much like or dislike Coast, sure, you can talk about, let's get the sound down, let's get the lights down, let's do something like that. But to go into Coast and let them own the land that they're on, as a business owner, what a great thing. I mean, now I have a little bit more control over my destiny. I'm not just a behold. I'd much rather have a deed to the land underneath my property. At
sure,
no
but it's
point,
public land.
Well,
it's not yours to sell, it's ours.
It is ours to sell.
It's
the Port of Port Townsend's to sell by vote of the commission. We can sell it. And so, but if you look at what we could do with that money, we're not talking about selling the marina. We're not talking, we don't own the beach, but we can enhance all the ground around the marina. We can fix the marina. We can turn that area into a park where the, what was the carrier? The house used to be. What's that?
Spears.
Spears. Where the Spears house used to be. I mean,
so I have
just
a,
kicking it around upstairs
in
the evil empire of the staff administration building. That's what we thought, is that if we sold that ground underneath the Coast, we could really enhance a lot of issues that have
been 4 months
on.
Of rent from them would dredge, and that's been forever. 4 months worth of their rent would have dredged so we could get boats in and out. And then I was approached by two different people the other day who come over who've been camping, and they said, it's no longer zoned for camping there. Is that correct?
It never was. It's a traditional use. So I think we can get a conditional use permit to change that. But that would be something we would have to go to.
So all the camping that's happened there for 100 years has not ever been okay?
No. Correct.
So there are people who have been camping there 30 and 40 years. And so, I mean, I remember hearing that, but I didn't know if that was a recent or...
It's
so
all zoned residential.
Can't camp there.
It's all zoned residential, and camping is not a permitted use. But
so, is there any effort to help that change?
We talked about it. I talked about it with staff, and it's if we have the money to do the development, you know. And the reason that it came up to me was that I was down there, and I was told, you know, that we get queries about camping down there. And I don't know, you know, I always assumed that with the noise and light down there, that it just wouldn't be very attractive. But I guess there are people who want to camp down there. So, on topic, less 30 seconds.
Well, I think, you know, we further discussions. This is great what you guys are doing this afternoon. And I just want to remind you, Point Hudson, we have three kinds of business. We have the leases, we have the marina, and we have the camping. The camping and the marina make about the same amount of money each year, $400,000 or thereabouts. So camping can be a big deal. It could even be bigger than what the marina is, but you need a separate field of some kind that's sophisticated enough that will pass all the regulations.
We have a lease one down there, is that what you mean?
Well, no, I mean, we need one that would be bigger than work.
Point.
No, down at in Quilcene.
No, we've got a huge
septic. A huge septic in Quilcene.
But who's that used by?
By Coast to Penco.
Oh.
It was built originally for an RV park.
Right.
That's what we were told, but, you know, we get told a lot.
We could probably get a group together and really brainstorm this, and I think that would go a long way in getting support to increasing property taxes. I already believe, I mean, if the port needs money, I'll sign the check on my property taxes. I have no problem doing that because I'm committed. Same thing with schools. I've always voted for every school levy, whatever. That's just how I look at
things. And I think, you know, the reason that we, in the at the end of the day, went to the IDD to do this instead of going to a general tax levy increase was really that is that, you know, after the experience with Prop 1 here in town and with the Quilcene school districts, there are just school district. There's just enough people in the county that you know, if they read tax on a proposition on the ballot, they check the no box. They don't care what it's about. They don't care, you know, if it's in their best interest or not. It says tax on it, they vote no.
My experience speaking with people over the last month regarding, you know, the proposed, there are many, many people who are supportive of paying a tax to an accountable board. And most people don't feel either that they're being represented, or that the port is accountable, or that they are having any kind of an advisory council situation set up where they have a forum. And it still hasn't happened. And I didn't hear anybody address that question that I had. And I'd love to go back and say what is happening with that, when,
you know,
how is that going to happen? Because lip service is really easy.
No, you're right. I'll just say real quick. You're right that we do want to, I call it a CAB, Citizens Advisory Board. We do want a CAB. It's getting it done. Yeah.
I think doing it before the IDD and before this proposed tax thing might have been to your benefit.
I would agree with that
educational piece would have been in your favor.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of folks who are quite bothered.
Sorry.
Briefly, the capital return replacement plan draft, which was not adopted, and the priorities that were identified in draft form in that document are a direct outgrowth of citizen input. The evaluation system that was used to rank those projects is attempting to give voice to the adopted commission policy, which is embodied in its strategic plan that was adopted in, I believe, 2011. That document was the product of tens and tens of hours of citizen input and involvement in an attempt to build trust and support for the projects that were being undertaken by the port. I will agree with you that, and I think you're entirely right in saying it's been too long since we've had a meaningful review and update of that document that factors citizen input. But when we talk about those project priorities, which I will reiterate, include a number of projects for districts 2 and 3, and seeks to give voice to the adopted policy through the essentially the evaluation system that was used to rank the project priorities, that was an outgrowth of citizen input. That's what we were attempting to give voice to.
What manner was that received, the citizen input, and when was that you're referring to?
This was in 2010 and 11. There were a whole series of stakeholder meetings that preceded the formulation of a strategic plan advisory committee.
Did you include Wilson in that at all?
Because Wilson South District 3 had a couple of representatives, as I recall, on that on that group. And it was it met over the course of nearly 1 year to develop that plan. And then when it came to the point of needing to do a comprehensive evaluation, port-wide evaluation of the condition of port assets and determine what the cost of bringing them up to standard would be, and then prioritizing those projects, the commission at the time requested that staff develop essentially an evaluation matrix that tried to give voice to the adopted plan policies to help us review, evaluate, and prioritize in a manner that was consistent with adopted policy. So we tried our best. I again would reiterate, it's been a while since that plan was updated and since the development certainly of the draft plan in 15 capital plan, and I don't disagree at all that additional and consistent and sustained citizen involvement is both wise and necessary.
Sue, do you know what we have? What all is on the list for the next workshop?
Actually, that's what I want to bring up. Committees. Remember at the last meeting in our commissioner comments, I said that we need to get this council started now, and that was going to be happening at the workshop we couldn't have today because Jim's not here. Had Jim been here, the workshop this morning would have been 100% getting that citizens advisory group together and going, and then also going over the items in the comprehensive scheme that I also brought up and then looked at for a long time. So in other words, basically everything you're complaining about is what I had mentioned that we should, at the end of our last meeting, should be doing in the workshop. We couldn't have today because Jim's not here, but it will be our 3 o'clock workshop next time.
So is that an invitation to people who's going to know about that workshop?
It'll be on the website, papers.
Okay, I'm just wondering, there's a...
Plan your day. Come and bring a lunch.
The Friday afternoon prior to the workshop, or to the meeting on that Wednesday. So Friday prior to
it. It'd be one of those nice things just for the port to make. I mean, most people aren't expecting that, so that's great.
Yeah, and that's the beginning of the process, and because I expect that we're gonna outline, you know, what we want the Citizens Advisory Board to be, and how we want it to operate with the advice of whoever happens to be in the room at the time, and it's gonna take some time to make us, you know, a selection of those people that are gonna serve on that board and get the kind of operating specifications for that done. But you know, I think it's been on my list. It was a District 2 commissioner challenge from years ago to get that done. I supported it then. I support it now. You know, and we've done incremental things. We've had advisory boards on leases and other things that have come up. So, you know, we haven't been public deaf as a commission. But I think we can always do better.
You did a great job on that. You know, having those citizens get involved in the lease policy. Those ought to be the same people that evaluate the parking, because they're knowledgeable of all the leases and everything, and they'd be up to speed right away and could get in and analyze them.
We're thinking that as well.
Yeah. My idea.
Don't bring in a whole bunch of new people do that.
My idea is that the Citizens Advisory Board will have a core group that will be, you know, fairly active, and that there'll be subcommittees, and there may be a leasing policy review subcommittee, and a parking and common area review policy committee, and you know, all these things will be satellites of the core CAB, and that's to see some organization that's active and cohesive and has some legs to it. But I think we're about there for the day. Do I have a second?
We're all good. I'm moving.
Okay.
I second.
All right. The next public workshop and regular meeting will be Wednesday, June 26th, here, 3 p.m. for the workshop and 5:30 for the court commission meeting. And that's all. Thanks for your attendance and your participation.